Coming up on TMS, snagging the rubber.
Will's wife.
Was there a show yesterday? Because I really, like, wanted to know.
Here today, gone tomorrow.
The Irish love their double D.
Same place, not in my butt.
Paging Dr. Skinny Fingers.
Conscience free, 23.
And up yours lifting story.
Googly eyes, patient zero.
Quit bragging about your terabytes.
A 10-hour tool.
Pick up at Island 5.
Cunning linguists with Amy.
Burn in the burnout with Wendy and more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
Some people use them to hold order. Curves together. Kids make scale models of famous buildings and bridges out of them. And some people actually use them for their primary purpose, to remove food caught between their teeth.
Oh, Disney, you naughty bitch.
The Morning Stream.
I was born without a conscience.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to TMS. It's the Morning Stream for Thursday, March 16th, 2023. I'm Scott Johnson, and that is Brian Ibbett.
Hello.
Man, I don't like missing shows at all, but no, we missed one yesterday, and we warned everybody, so y'all knew we were doing it. But how did your thing go, your doctor visit go?
You know, it went just fine. My regular GP was not available. Basically, they said, hey, we know you've got this regular prescription that you need for such and such. We can't renew it unless you get your physical. If you want to schedule with your regular GP, we've got openings in June. Or if you want to meet with one of his PAs, then we can get you in next week. They said this to me last week. Mm. What I should have said is, great, can you hook me up with whichever one has the skinniest fingers? Is there one who's just known for having little skinny fingers?
Instead, they gave you the guy with gigantism.
Gave me a woman who had lovely skinny fingers.
Oh, good, good. Yes. That's good. You know what? I've said this before, and I still don't understand why, but when it comes to physicals, rather have a lady.
I don't know.
I don't know why. I can't explain it. I just know I prefer it. Yeah. It's got nothing to do with sex, anybody who thinks it is.
No. It has nothing to do with,
no.
Okay, let me cup these, turn your head and cough.
Yeah,
by the way, I didn't have to do that. She cupped them, but I didn't have to. I don't know why I didn't have to turn my head and cough.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Yeah, it can be the same with massages. I just prefer a lady. It's not like I'm George Costanza freaking out because some dude's touched me.
Jerry.
It's not that at all. I just have more trust for women. Don't know why. Mm-hmm. Plus, they do have the smaller finger.
They have the smaller fingers. And Lucky Phil, I don't know if... I certainly don't think that the PA that worked with me had long fingernails. I think as a nurse, as a physician's assistant, even as a doctor, if you're a woman, I feel like it looks unprofessional to have long, you know, French nail tips kind of manicured deal.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, am I making a an unfair generalization? Like, no, Brian, we can have long fingernails. We'll just, you know.
Yeah, it just seems like they would be in their way, like more of a practical,
right? Exactly.
Point of reference. It's like, well, if you're a doctor, you're going to have moments of needing to be intricate with your fingers and your hands to check for this and check for that. And you're on your back checking for heartbeats with the cold thing. And you don't want to be poking people or having a hard time holding your stethoscope.
No, exactly. Yeah. Amy says long fingernails would be a pain for any profession where you have to regularly put on latex gloves. Good point.
Oh, yeah. Because exactly. You'll snag the rubber, as they say. You don't want to snag that rubber, you know?
That's what I did on the way to prom.
That's right. Ba-boom. Anyway.
Stop to the convenience store. Never mind. All right. Hey, how you doing, Scott?
Hey, I'm doing good.
How'd your physical go?
Well, here's the hilarious thing. Your doctor was gone, so you had to do one of his assistants. It was supposed to be mine, and I got a call at the last minute that she wasn't going to be her. So I said...
Oh, no.
I'd rather wait for her. So
really? So it really was a situation. Well, you really did have the opportunity to still have your physical done by a dude, but said, nope, I will wait.
It may have been somebody else besides the dude, but I was just like, you know what? This isn't anything we're rushing for. It's just similar thing. I need to get some prescriptions renewed. So I'm going later. Instead, yesterday I chilled out, spent time with Van,
nice.
Hung out with the boy and Carter and Kim, chilling. It was nice.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
It was a nice morning, I will admit.
Yeah.
It was nice. So that's what I did. For all I know, there's a rat living in my corn chute, and now a doctor hasn't seen it. I don't know.
I decided to lift, and you know what? I didn't even put in the show notes, and I could talk about it later if we've got, you know, we've got, because I know you still have a couple top of show things to talk about, but.
I always like a good lift show or a story. Do you want?
All right.
Should we wait for that, or do you want to do it now? I don't. It doesn't matter to me.
Let's do it now, and I'll do it fairly quickly.
All right.
But I got. This is the first. Somebody can remind me if I'm completely forgetting something, but this is like the first horrible experience I've had lifting, and it wasn't even a passenger.
Oh, it had nothing to do with passengers? Hold
nothing
on, can I guess?
Passenger.
I want to guess.
All right, yeah.
Gastrointestinal.
Never in a million years guess.
Gastrointestinal emergency.
Well, okay, I did have that like last year, and that was a horrible experience.
That's right.
So I did forget about that, yes.
Okay.
But no, it wasn't. But oddly enough, in exactly the same place. Not my butt, but at the airport.
Oh, the airport. Okay, interesting. Let's hear this.
All right, so dropped off a customer at the airport and immediately got a notification that I had another ride to pick up at the airport. Usually, the pickup locations are at Island 5. So you've got the terminal, and then you've got on the pickup level, it's all the commercial vehicles, right? So you've got taxis at Island 1. You've got Island 2 is like buses to the outside parking lots. Threes, you know, whatever, it's like the buses that go up to the mountains, etc. But it's basically a whole level that is not for regular people to come up and pick up their friends. They have another level for regular schmoes to go and pick up their buddies from the airport.
Okay. Our new airport has that now as well. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So taxis, lifts, all that sort of thing. And normally our location is to pick up at Island 5. 4 years of lifting, only one other time have I ever gotten a request to not pick up at Island 5, and it was for an accessibility ride. It was somebody that was on crutches. They got the door right there at the entrance. I pulled up. They got in, no problem.
Okay.
Yesterday, I get another one, and I get the ride. It says, "Oh, you're picking up between doors 511 and 513." I drive really about 100 feet forward from where I dropped off the last passenger. It's like, great, this is nice and convenient. I don't have to, because if you have to do Island 5, I have to go all the way around to the other side of the airport and then back all the way around to the east side to Island 5. It is a 10-15 minute ordeal.
Okay. All right.
So I pull up, I open up the hatchback or the back of the thing, because I'm always ready in case they've got luggage.
Sure.
And I sit and wait, and I kind of look around, and then one of the police that works at the airport comes over and says, "Hey, do you have a pickup here?" And I said, "Yeah, it's an accessibility ride." And I show him the app. He's like, "All right." He goes off.
Okay.
I wait, and it's like time is ticking down. They've got 5 minutes, and we're already 3 minutes in. And I'm like, "All right, where are they?" And I grab my phone and look at it. And just as I do that, he calls and he says, "Hey, where are you at?" And I said, "I'm right by doors 511 and 513." He said, "Oh, I'm at Island 5. I thought that's where I was supposed to go." And I said, "Well, if you go to Island 5 in the app, you need to say I'm at Island 5 and not request an accessibility ride from these doors."
Oh, like, I see what they did.
Like,
okay.
He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I said, "So I can drive around and pick you up. It'll probably be about 10 minutes. He's like, "Well, are you just right there?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm like right at the entrance where you came out." And I say, I wave at him and I say, "Can you see me?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, I'll be there in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Because seriously, it takes that long to walk from Island 5.
Yeah.
The airport police see me waving and talking to the guy.
Oh, shit.
And not the guy who came over, but his buddy says, "Oh," in his loudest voice possible, "Oh, so you're a liar then."
What?
I'm like, "What?" He's like, "So you just park up here and shame on you for making your passenger walk to you." And I'm like, "No, it's an accessibility ride." And I have the app in my hand. I'm showing him. He's like, "Oh, don't, you know, I don't care anything you have to say. You guys know how to manipulate things." And he comes over and he starts taking pictures of my car from the back, like getting my license plate from the back and with the front, like this airport security guy doing this.
I would be so irritated right now. Brian, I want to jump out of my skin and punch somebody. I hate this story.
Inside, I was boiling. I mean, he's loudly calling me a liar. He's loudly, and like, you know, other people, my passenger is getting in the car. He's like, yelling, you know, he's yelling at me in front of all these other people at the waiting area. I'm like, dude, it says accessibility. He's like, you guys know how to manipulate things. I know what you guys do. I'm like, for Pete's sake. Like, I basically, you know, say it like that. He's like, yeah, for Pete's sake. He repeats back to me. I said, look, I tried to calmly explain to you, at least I was polite. And I'm getting in the car. And he says, I was polite too. I could have given you a ticket.
F that guy. Foot that to the guy. Groin moment here. I freaking hate him. I hate him.
So, like, I got in the car and the guy's like, oh man, I'm so sorry. I just bumped. I could have sworn I hit the right area for pickup. I'm like, dude, totally happens. Not your fault. That guy's just, you know,
he's an ass.
He feels like he's a big fish in a small pond. He gets to boss people around. So I drove off, was nice, chatted with the guy the whole ride. He was actually really cool. He's visiting his son who moved out here during the pandemic, fell in love with Colorado and stayed and all that. And but when I got home, fortunately, my new Ring dash camera that I had installed captured video of the guy like taking pictures. And I took a screenshot of the thing of the app that said accessibility ride. And so I forwarded both of those to airport feedback, like basically customer service, and said, here's the whole story of what happened. Here's photos of the guy who did it. And here's the photo of the accessibility ride, blah, blah, blah. So listen, I don't want him to get fired over this unless he's got a history of doing this.
Yeah. If he's a dick, I'd
like
him to
get fired, but I would like an official complaint added to his file so that if he does continue to do this, there's record that he.
I agree. You know what? While Third Eagle was worried about blue horses and penises, he should have been worried about that guy.
That's what he should be worried about. But I'm kind of hoping I get another airport ride the next time that I go there, because I want to see if he's there and I can, you know, like give him the bird as I drive by, or say, you're a dick.
Doppler effect dick you can throw out there.
If I didn't want to get my passenger to wherever he needed to go, part of me was going to be like, yeah, give me a ticket so I know who to complain to about your crappy attitude and the way you treated me.
That's lame. I'm mad for you and with you and near you. I hate that.
I hate it.
Yeah. Oh, that would make me so mad. Plus, you're talking about, you're at a busy thing. Airport's always just coming and going. Everybody's always got stuff to do. And this guy had to take his time to do that. Give me a freaking break.
And there was no, like, even if he could say, well, my job is to make sure the traffic is going through here clearly and there's nobody stopped for no reason. Even if that was the only excuse, there was zero people around me. There was no cars in front of me or behind me or anything like that. So
lame.
Anyway, okay. Sorry, let's get on to happier stuff.
I'm mad for you, all right? All right.
I really wanted to, like, be an ass back to him, but I...
You showed great restraint. I showed restraint. Yeah. Which, you know, it's hard to do in a situation like that.
I'm a professional. You all have nothing to worry about.
All right, well, speaking of professionals, we're here to professionally give away some stuff. I want to give a rando pack in the mail. This will be like prints and stickers and stuff, and we're going to do it with a brand new segment we call...
Stand back and check your personal belongings. It's time for the morning form.
All right, it's time for the morning form. The morning form. That's right. This is where you guys go fill out a thing, and then you are in the running for today's giveaway. Frogpants.com/the morning form. Just click on the button that you're presented with there. It'll take you to a little Google form. And put your stuff in. Today's subject is best movie aliens. All right? So you click on that form. It'll tell you right there. Best movie aliens. Best film aliens. So it's, you know, alien creatures or types of aliens from movies. It's a big list of multiple choice for you to choose from, including something that isn't listed here. And you can write in your own if you want. That's all just for fun, and also just to be cool data once we're done. I want to see what everybody picked. But the main goal here is one of you will win some stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
So frognestduck.com
slash the morning form, all lowercase.
All lowercase, the morning form, which we Brian figured out this morning was definitely case sensitive. I did not.
Because I was going to be one of the first people to reply. I'm like, ooh, which one's the alien choices here?
Yeah, I'm glad you did, because you got a dead page, and I would have sent everyone to a dead page had I done this wrong. But anyway.
Totally fine.
Go do it. Frognest.com slash the morning form, yes.
How come Alf is not listed? He's not in a film.
There's no film that I know of with Alf. Although, if you're saying there is one coming, I'll sign me up. I'll watch an Alf movie. I'll do that. That would be fun.
Hey, where's the cat?
I mean, that's kind of the gist of the entire series.
Shumway.
Yeah, that's his thing. I'm trying to find
Silver Wisp 83. Good point.
What happened?
You forgot a very important alien that really should be in that list.
Oh, yeah, look at that. I mean... How did we not include him?
Stitch.
I guess I didn't include other. Did I do
animated
stuff? No. Yeah, I guess I didn't. Well, you know, next time. but here's how this will work, because people at home are like, wait a minute, you're doing this just live? No, it's we announced the winner on Monday. So you guys, everybody at home has a chance to do it as well. All right. It's going to do these on the regular. There'll be all kinds of different prizes over time. Today's happens to be a print and sticker pack that will come directly to your door. And it means that international people can play too, because it's this nice thin package that I can send anywhere in the world for less than it usually costs to ship stuff overseas. So again, at home, if you're listening, frogpants.com/themorningform.
I like the arrival aliens that only talk in coffee, the rings that are left on the table when you drink coffee.
Oh yeah, you know what you need for that. You need
a coaster. What are you talking about, a coaster, Scott? There's no cool coasters out there. Well, we really could use a cool coaster.
There is a cool coaster that isn't even part of the Vegas swag bag. I made these separately. Here is the TMS Vegas 2023 coaster.
It's so freaking rad.
And that might be in the package that wins this week. Who knows if that'll be in there.
I can't wait for that to absorb my fluids.
Right. You need an absorbent pad, Brian.
Coffee fluids.
Brian
needs the coffee off my cup.
He's all out of absorbent pads, Brian is. So we're going to we're gonna send him one. Anyway, so there's that. Go. Get in there and get that done. All right. We're going to call Amy because it's Amy time.
Yeah.
Let me just see if I can figure out why Red Fraggle isn't coming. There we go. Okay. She's back from her trip.
Maybe get her doppelganger.
Yeah, it could be someone who looks just like her. I really need to know the story on this, so we'll ask her shortly, right after this.
One of the things that I enjoy also is reading.
Us too, mister. It's time for us to play a little Read This, where we learn how to read books from Amy. She teaches us how to read. You're going to teach us how to read.
I got a new intro. I like
it. What do I do when I get to the end of a page? Does that mean the book is over?
Yeah. How does it work?
How does it work?
Amy, can you...
Well, as Grover would tell us, you don't turn the page.
Oh, that's true.
Right, because there's a monster at the end of this book.
That's right. You just got back from the Joko cruise. How'd it go? Was it fun?
I did. It was great. It was good fun, as it always is.
Yeah.
I have cool stories to share, but the probably the funniest one that I can share in a small amount of time has to do with the picture I sent you.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
So as you saw there, there's a dude that looks remarkably like Chuck. Yes. And as it happens, he is actually the official Joko Cruise photographer. He's a really nice guy. His name's Steve. And he wears nothing but Batman logo shirts. Like, he has like 40 something Batman logo shirts. So he is known on boat as Bat Steve.
Okay.
And so we met him on our first cruise, and they, you know, we chatted up with him and his spouse. He's a real, like I say, he's a really nice guy and whatnot. And it was kind of funny that we noted like how much they looked alike. So Chuck decided that in future years he's going to cosplay on there, because there is a cosplay day.
There's a cosplay day
on the boat, and so Chuck said, my cosplay is I'm gonna cosplay as Bat Steve.
That's great. That's great.
I was wondering if, like, God, did Chuck just happen to have a Batman t-shirt and a camera with him, that so he brought this as his cosplay outfit?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes. Oh, I mean, he has that nice DSLR camera. He didn't buy a nice camera for cosplay or anything. But an
expensive cosplay.
Yeah.
He did have to buy a Batman logo shirt because, he did not have one. But yes, so but that's not the end of the story.
Oh, there's more?
So there's more. Oh, it gets so much better.
Found out they were twins.
They're separated at birth. No. So Chuck and Bat Steve were up in the coffee shop area. There's up in the crow's nest, they have a place where you can actually get nice coffee. And so they were chatting it up. They were in line, and Steve said, hang on just a second, I got to go do something. Can you watch my camera stuff for me? And Chuck says, sure, of course, mm-hmm. So Steve leaves his stuff, at his place in line. Yeah. And then Chuck has to go grab something. So he leaves his camera in line also, just, goes across the room, grabs something, comes back, and
where he line can see has, it still. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Line has formed behind where Chuck was. And so, but he kind of just scoots back in front of the nice blonde lady who's there. And it's just like, oh, sorry. I promise I was here already. Blonde lady says, yeah, sure. But she's jovial and nice about it.
Sure.
And then Steve comes back and they're chatting it up. And again, remember, this is the official Joko Cruise photographer guy. Yeah. So he knows everyone.
Right.
So then up walks Will Wheaton.
Oh, Will Wheaton.
To join his wife in line.
Oh, the blonde, nice blonde lady was.
Oh my God, Chuck, you cut off Ann Wheaton? Really?
Wow. So now you're in trouble.
They just have this lovely 10-minute conversation, and they're talking about having creative spouses and all this kind of thing and whatnot. They just have this lovely little chat. Meanwhile, I think I was in a crafting class. I'm completely somewhere else on the boat. Chuck just casually texts me I had this nice 10-minute convo with Will Wheaton. I was like, what?
That's great.
Oh, and no selfie with him?
No. Well, and so then here's where the picture comes in.
Okay.
So we're up on deck later on, and I said, okay, we've got to get the cosplay, Bat Steve doppelganger picture here, right? Yeah, so we take that one that you showed, mm-hmm. and then there's another one that I sent you where they're doing the Spider-Man point at each other deal, And so we pose that picture right then. Again, Will Wheaton comes walking by and just doubles over, cackling, laughing. He thinks that's the funniest. He doesn't say anything. He's just he's just cackling at it. And I look behind me and it's Will Wheaton. And I was like, I asked Steve, I was like, was that Will? And he's like, yeah. And I said, that just made my day. I mean, making anybody laugh that much is awesome. Yeah.
Did you turn?
Right?
Did you turn and say this?
Shut up, Wesley.
Did you do that? No.
Oh, no.
Okay. All right. Oh, no. Just checking.
But, yeah, he's really, really nice. We saw him later on, a beach day. There was a guy who had a t-shirt from the tabletop show that he does. Mm-hmm. And he saw him wearing that. He said, dude, I owe you a high five. That's one of the perks of you being our patron, is I give you a high five. And and he was like, I got this 12 years ago. He said, hey, doesn't expire. He was just a really nice, really, really nice guy. And and he said, the guy says to him, well, thanks for coming. And Will just says, well, thank you for having me.
Aww.
And I mean, it was the most genuine thing. He's just really nice
seems
guy.
Like a really nice guy. Yeah. And September interviewed him for America's Next Top Podcaster. And it was just such a great interview. If you haven't heard it, whether or not you listen to ANTP, you should go back and listen to that interview.
It's also rare. He doesn't do those very often. Just busy and can't do it I remember I was doing a joint thing on Twit and he had to turn them down for this interview because he was so busy. So it's kind of rare.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember being shocked when she got that interview. I was like, are you kidding me? This guy's supposed to be one of the hardest dudes to get to sit down and do a podcast. And yet there it is. That was awesome.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Very cool.
I'm sorry. People are saying my mic is hot. I don't know if it was just because I yelled what, or am I like hot in general?
It was a little hot. I think it was just because you were excited about the story. And so
I'm sorry.
No apology necessary.
It's just expressing how stoked you are. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Exactly. It was just really funny. Like, that just made my day. Cause like I say, you know, you make anybody laugh that much and mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. feels good. But then you look and it's like, oh, person I admire and know who they are. I made them laugh that much. That's even better.
That's great. Well, I'm glad it went well. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah. It was really fun. And they had all kind of art installations this year, which was really fun. Yeah. Like, they had like one place where they had it, they called it the Gamer's Garden. Mm-hmm. And it was all these plant related things from video games. And so they showed like the little chomper plant from Mario, you know, yeah. And then they had like a pea shooter from Plants vs. Zombies, and they had the Cactor guy from another game. It was really neat. And they had to put up signs that said, please don't put googly eyes on them, because everybody puts googly eyes on everything on that ship. Mm-hmm. So, which, by the way, is also Anne Wheaton's fault.
I was going to say, Anne Wheaton is the, you know, at least what I consider to be the patient zero of the googly eyes trend. Maybe Everything Everywhere All at Once might have re-amplified it, but.
Re-upped the opportunity. The Cactars from, that's not Final Fantasy, is it? I thought that was Dragon Quest. I don't know. That's cool, though. You have any pictures of that by chance?
I do. I think I sent you a couple
One right here. There it is. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm pretty sure that's Dragon Quest.
I knew you would get a kick out of that. And I have some other stuff just to send you. Like, they put a full arcade on board. Chuck was very excited in that photo about the there was like the little lichen with the eyeballs from mm-hmm. Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. And because you can't see it in this photo, but the shirt that he's wearing is from Roosevelt's, and it's got the little worm from Labyrinth, and it says "Allo" all over it. You know, it's
love,
really cool.
Love the shirts from Roosevelt's. Tina got me like two of them at D23, and I can't wait for it to be warm again so I can wear them.
Cool. Like that's
wear one
that's,
in Vegas.
That's nice. Chuck's favorite thing to wear now are those Roosevelt shirts. Yeah. He's got a whole collection of them. So
nice.
That is so cool.
Well,
and thank you, Brian, because I found out about them from you. So
stop it. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah.
That's great. It's Roosevelt. The presidency lives on in shirts now. That's right. That's where you get them.
That's right. Both Franklin D. and Teddy.
That's
both
right.
Live on in shirts.
That's right. Forever.
All of the Roosevelts.
So did you get time to read? Did you have any book things happen while you were there? Or probably just
so there
fun?
Were there are a lot of authors who come on board there. I tell you what I did a lot of was crafting and learning about new crafts, which is one of my favorite things to do. But I did get to write down a lot of new authors that I want to check out. I haven't had a chance to go and read any of those yet, but they're totally on my list now because they always feature some new authors that I've never heard of before, or, you know, that are just awesome in general. I mean, John Scalzi always goes and, you know, he apparently there was a thing where John Scalzi was like a big fan of wearing bright green Crocs. I don't know. I missed that part. There's always something. No matter how much you pack your schedule full, you're always missing something because it's like Dragon Con. There's too much to do.
Yeah.
So I missed that particular meme. But yeah, like I can confirm I was on a tender boat back from the beach with John Scalzi, and he was wearing bright green Crocs. But
wow.
You know, I took a minute to tell him, you know, that I appreciated the Kaiju Preservation Society because I enjoyed it, and it was indeed a much needed break. So, because that's why he wrote it. He specifically wrote it as like a break from COVID and all that stuff.
The crap going on. Yeah.
He was like, he's like, I need to write a pop song of a novel. And I was like, mission accomplished.
Nothing wrong with that.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Sometimes you just need to do it.
I, Yeah, so I didn't do that much reading on board because, frankly, if I was still enough to be reading, I was probably sleeping. But because, man, you know, I taught a puppet building class on the ship, and you know, I learned a bunch of new stuff. Like, I'm sitting here right now, I'm putting stitches onto this ball. It's this Japanese art called Temari, which I had heard of before, but only on that cruise. It's basically you sew geometric patterns onto a round ball, which when I describe it like that, it sounds really boring, but it's really fascinating and cool to look at. Because
hold on, how do you stitch it into patterns. The side of the ball? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, like, well, so the ball itself, like the core of the ball is styrofoam, mm-hmm. and then you wrap it in this very fine pink thread, and so you just kind of jam it through there, and then you make all these really cool. I'll post a picture of mine when it's done.
There's a whole website dedicated to it. Temari.com has like a ton of these are wild. Look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, my mom has a bowl of these. She didn't make them, but she has a giant bowl full of these.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty rad, I think. And like, I think they would make great Christmas ornaments, or, you know, just stuff like that. I love things like that with really intricate geometric repeated patterns and things like that. I love learning how to do things like that. I became obsessed with origami after I went on this cruise. Also, like, you learn all kinds of cool stuff. So
that's cool. Yeah. These look nice. I thought my mom had a collection of like holy hand grenades, but they're
Temari balls.
They're Temari balls. Yeah.
Nice.
That's cool. All right.
Yeah. Very nice. Today, gone Temari.
I see what you did. Hey, so what are you going to recommend we listen to this week or watch?
All right. So as you guys may or may not know, March is Women's Month. You know, last week there was International Women's Day. And so I figured now would be a good time for this book that I'm recommending this week.
Excellent. Here is your clip, everybody. Enjoy. Whoops, wrong tab. Here it is, right here.
Getting people to understand that language itself is a means through which people can be harmed, elevated, or valued is really important, Zimin says. Zimin, like most of the other word whizzes I talked to for this book, is a linguist, a profession that, despite common misconceptions, has nothing to do with learning to speak dozens of foreign languages or correcting people's split infinitives. Linguistics is, in fact, the scientific study of how language works in the real world. Under that umbrella falls sociolinguistics, where the studies of language and human sociology intersect. It actually wasn't that long ago, around the 1970s, when linguists first began studying how human beings use language as a social tool to do things like create solidarity, form relationships, and assert authority. Out of everything they investigated, the most eye-opening and contentious subject has undoubtedly been language and gender. That is, how people use language to express gender, how gender impacts how a person talks, and how their speech is perceived. Over the decades, linguists have learned that pretty much every corner of language is touched by gender, from the most microscopic units of sound to the broadest categories of conversation. And because gender is directly linked to power in so many cultures, necessarily, so is language. It's just that most of us can't see it.
Interesting. Tell me more. Who is this?
Yes. So this book is called Word Slut, A Feminist Guide to Taking Back the English Language by Amanda Montell. And she goes through a lot of how our language has evolved to support current gender norms and the patriarchy and things like that, but just in a dispassionate and scientific way, like a linguist's scholarly way. Like, this is how this word evolved, but it's also very accessible. You know, I mean, you can hear her voice is very conversational. That's actually her reading it. Mm-hmm. And it's all very accessible and funny. Yeah, there are the chapter names alone are worth hanging out for this book, because like there's a chapter called Slutty Skanks and Nasty Dykes, a comprehensive list of gendered insults. Okay. You know, I mean, who doesn't want to read that? How to embarrass the shit out of people who try to correct your grammar. Yeah. F it, an ode to cursing while female, you know, things like that. It's just hilarious.
Wow.
And it's really great. And it just does a really deep dive into how gender has both affects and is affected by our language, and therefore how it impacts society. Specifically, I haven't run into her using the term woke yet, but because I think this was written slightly before. I mean, it's modern enough. Like, she talks about the exchange, the you know, Access Hollywood exchange that Trump has, but from a linguistics point of view, which is fascinating, frankly. She talks about that, so it's recent enough that it's got some cool recent events. But I don't know if woke had entered the lexicon quite yet, but she does talk a lot about how African-American vernacular English, you know, we get so much of our slang from there, and things warp from what they were originally used for in AAVE into something else, which is what has happened with the word woke.
Sure.
So I just found it, I find this book endlessly fascinating, and just doing these deep dives into this is where this word came from. And you know, like, when I say bitch, you know, these are all the things that probably come to your mind. Right. But what if I told you that it completely meant something else originally, and that language evolves, and this is how we got here. And just taking words like and dissecting them and figuring out this is how we got this pattern of speech. I don't know. I find that really fascinating, and she does it in a way that makes it really conversational and accessible. She tells a story about being on a train with a very posh looking, you know, New England woman, and it was like a fellow parent, right? They were on their way to some school thing, and their kids were friends. And so the author of the book asked the girls, Hey, how did y'all do on your test? And the other mother just clutched her pearls and was like, oh, you can't say y'all. Someone might think you're Southern. And then she goes into, and she took that opportunity to, approach her with curiosity about, oh, really? Why do you think that? And actually, the word y'all is a very utilitarian second person plural. And I didn't want to use you guys because, as far as I know, neither of our daughters identifies as a guy. And so therefore, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was just very, and she actually left the conversation feeling like, I bet she won't call anybody out for using y'all again. So. She did it in such a way that it was just an intellectual exercise, not a, hey, I'm going to call you out and make a conflict kind of a thing.
Interesting.
Which I thought was really cool. Yeah. So
interesting.
I don't know. I think I always feel like, hey, the more you know, right?
Yes, I always think that as well. That's great. That sounds great. Tell me the name of the book again, just so people can hear it one more time.
The name of the book is Word Slut.
Word. So I don't know how you'd forget that, but it is Word Slut.
Yep. Word Slut. All one word.
Yep. Word Slut. All one word.
Quick TMS.li will also have a link to it. So go check that out.
Already does.
Yep. Amy, it's good to have you on. I'm glad you're home. You're safe. Everything's good. No cruise COVID. No CC, as I like to call it.
No COVID. Yeah. We've already tested. We came back negative. Everything's good. I'm tired. I've got the post vacation, you know, I need to sleep for a week thing going on. But other than that, yeah, everything's great.
Yeah, the vacation after the vacation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Aren't nearly enough of those. It's Amy Robinson, everybody. Red Fraggle, wherever you find her. Amy, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
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 Bye. All right.
I think we need to do one of those. What we need to do is figure out how to make Paul and Storm invite us to do TMS Live on a Joko cruise. Instead of like us reaching out, we need somebody to reach out to Paul and Storm and say, hey, you would be great on a Joko cruise. is Scott and Brian in the morning stream, and they could do a live show there. You should maybe see if they're up for that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And say, and then they'll reach out to us and say, are you guys up for that? And we'll be like, if you could get us, yeah, maybe.
You know, all expenses paid. Yeah, well, we're good. We're good.
Yeah, I guess we'll do it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You want to do that? Let's do it.
Amy says that they are under the impression that Scott doesn't want to do it. Is that true?
I don't know.
Anti-cruise for a while until you just went on your more recent.
Yeah, but I never told anybody I wouldn't do that. I don't know why they're under that impression.
You might have said that on the show, and maybe that got back to him.
That I didn't want to go on the cruise?
That you didn't like cruises.
Oh, that I didn't like cruises.
Potential disease fest that they can be.
Yeah, I don't know who told them that, but yeah, I guess so. They could have got it from that. If those guys... Oh yeah, is that what it is? Yeah, Paul thinks you're not pro cruises. Well, I'm not anti cruise. Not really pro cruise. I hate Ted Cruz. Yeah, I don't like Ted Cruz. Penelope Cruz is great. Tom Cruise is all right in certain contexts. I don't know who else. Who's another Cruz? I can't think of anyone else. Anyway, it is a disease fest, but you know,
no more so than just going to the mall or going to, you know.
I don't know about that. I'll bet your chances on a cruise ship are worse than a mall. Well, it depends on the cruise ship, obviously.
If you spend 3 days in the mall, I think they're probably equivalent.
Yeah, I guess that's true. With the same
500 people, you're stuck in the mall, then it's the same.
You go five, 6 days straight in a mall. That's probably about right. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, my sister Wendy will be here. We got a little thing to do with her, so we'll get to that in a second. But we need some music to break things up. What do you got?
Continuing our week of rock, we've got Lucius Malcolm, who goes by Call Me Malcolm. This is brand new debut solo album, Past, Present, and Future Regrets, which just came out now. Now, if you like bands like Rise Against, Jimmy Eat World, don't say those, you know, Rise Against, Jimmy Eat World, Alkaline Trio, the Menzingers, kind of melodic punk, really, really good stuff. This is, like I said, the brand new single, which comes from Past, Present, and Future Regrets. It is called Zero Sums Game. Here is Lucius Malcolm.
Could be heaven, but there is hell to pay today. Another problem for a cell phone user is keeping track of your airtime. Ultra Data introduced a unique gadget called the Time Tracker. The device attaches through a simple Velcro strip and picks up your cell phone activity by sensing the antenna transmissions. The Time Tracker can display your current monthly bill and even keep track of free off-peak usage.
Whiling away the afternoon in the tub is more than a way to wash our bodies.
The Morning Stream. There's no such thing as fair in a fight to a death in a thing.
All right, we're back, everybody. Welcome back to the program. Please tell me who that was one more time.
Yeah, that is Lucius Malcolm. He's the frontman for the UK ska punk band Call Me Malcolm. But this is his first solo project. It's called Past, Present, and Future Regrets. This is the brand new song, Zero Sums Game.
Nice. All right. Stack your boxes. Wendy's coming on.
My boxes are stacked.
Good, because that's where they need to be for this hard-hitting psychological thing we're about to do. All right, so get ready for this. Here we go.
Wendy.
I mean, random.
Not a chance.
It's Wendy, my sister, Wendy Dunford, joining us.
What was that?
From the Twin Cities. I don't know, just a thing. I've been working on a few tweaks, a little changes to some of the audio on the show, and so we decided to redo yours. And that's you in the middle there, by the way.
Wendy.
I mean, random.
Not a chance.
I don't know why... I don't know why Martin Short is talking to you that way, but whatever. That's actually, I think, from the movie Inner Space, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Meg Ryan played Wendy. And Wendy was his coworker, right?
Something to that effect.
Because she comes up to him to finally date him after he's saved the world, and he goes, not a chance.
Yeah. I used to think that movie was so good. And it was good. It was fun. I don't think it's that good. It's all right.
Yeah.
Anyway, my sister Wendy, she's here. She's gonna talk some psychology here today. She's an actual practicing therapist, and the rest of us are just schlubs who come to her altar and say, "Please help me." And we got a text that wants to ask you a question. Wendy, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. This came to 801-471-0462. Feel free to use it if you'd like. This is from, he says his name is Krondo in the chat. When he can, he told me that it was fine if I used his name in a later discussion. Is there a certain level of professional burnout that is actually permanent and dangerous? What can one do to challenge the burnout they feel and get a fresh perspective, says Krondo. Well, Krondo, let's find out. I assume when he says professional burnout, we're just talking about like work stuff, right? Like,
assume so. Yeah.
Maybe the principle is the same no matter what we're talking about, but I assume that's what he means. So,
but professional burnout would lean towards work as opposed to, personal burnout.
Yeah, unless you're a developer for the game Burnout. I think it's specifically a professional burnout. So let's, you know, somebody who works too many hours or spent a long time doing a thing and they're just tired of it or whatever. Can that sort of thing become, as in his words, permanent and or dangerous?
Yes, dangerous, definitely. Permanent, kind of. Those are really good answers I gave you. I think, well, let's just talk quickly about, you know, we observe the brain a lot in MRI and fMRI scans, and we make a lot of educated guesses on stuff, right? But I think, how far do we still need to go to really understand this stuff? It's exciting, right? What we know so far is exciting, mm-hmm. and the more we learn, but a lot of times we're just seeing a region of the brain light up and we're like, cool. And we don't really know how it's happening exactly. However, there are a couple of things you can kind of see changes over time. And that's really where a lot of our good data comes from, is watching a brain morph, the same brain or the same brains morph. Anyway, but there is some research to show with burnout that, and if you've ever experienced burnout, you'll be like, uh-huh, this is obvious. That it actually affects your brain's functioning, which is real. Like, it's real.
Sure.
And there's some brain imaging studies that show that your amygdala is actually enlarged and the frontal cortex is thinning. And now let's remind our dear listeners what that means. The amygdala is the fear center part of the brain. It's the part that senses danger all the time. If you struggle with anxiety, dysregulation, your amygdala is on fleek all day, right? And that, so they're showing some enlargement there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're showing thinning in the frontal cortex, and that is where our executive functioning.
See, that feels permanent to me when you say thinning, like this mm-hmm. literal yeah. physical thinning of a brain yeah. thing. That's
you don't think
bad.
Of it thickening.
No.
Yeah, it's hard to get back to the thickening. And the reality is, I mean, from what I know, it doesn't to be permanent. It can be reversed, but it is slow, and you have to do something about it. You can't just keep going, doing all the same things and being like, why isn't this getting better? Hmm. You have to behave differently. And sometimes that is like very, very real break from whatever professional thing you were doing in order to recover. What's hard, and we don't have to spend a ton of time going into the socioeconomic reasons for all of this, but there are a lot of cultures that don't, well, there's one mainly that does not allow for any breaks. You know, very little actual vacation time, and you know, sick leave and different things are how this would be rectified. But when it's very minimized, you know, in terms of what you actually have, it's hard to recover from burnout.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
I mean, I've known people, it takes a year and a half to really fully recover from burnout. So maybe we should pull this apart a little bit. What's professional burnout versus what's sort of recently, I was talking to someone about their family dynamic since they were children. I always find those folks are burning out by about age 40. Mm-hmm. And that is playing the role they've always played, you know, making sure everybody's happy, you're people pleasing, that kind, those kind of behaviors mm-hmm. that usually stem from a very young age. It's like we run out of energy to keep them going. And so burnout tends to be more likely then, as well as professional burnout. This is why we have midlife crises, people. It's a lot of things will coalesce around that time frame of kind of running out of energy to do the same things we've always done. And maybe professional pressures are a little different at that stage too. So any other burnouts I'm missing? So we've got professional, maybe personal, caregiver burnout.
Relationship burnout.
Relationship like, burnout.
Is that a burnout thing where it's like you're just sick of the person you're with, or I don't know how that would work.
Well, let's actually take we're going to use the brain scan just as a foundation for a second. So anything that's going to keep your fear responses high and your thinking straight low.
Okay. Like
those two things are maybe an interesting framing for burnout of I'm more on edge. I'm more anxious. I'm more stressed. I'm more afraid. And then I can't think. I mean, I feel like when I had COVID, I had the brain fog pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought, is this what, like, the frontal lobe thing is off? Like, it's not working. Yeah. It's really difficult to do some basic stuff you could always just do. And so that's one of a common descriptors when people are experiencing burnout is just stuff that used to be no-brainers for them are suddenly really frustrating and difficult or not as fast or as good at.
Right.
So there's a couple versions of this, and maybe, you know, burnout is a word we should be more careful as we define, but I think it's when you just lose motivation, the willpower to keep doing it, and there's like almost a physical inability to do so anymore. And mm-hmm. I think that's where the brain stuff actually shows up.
Yeah. Is that our brain going, hey, you did this too much. Now I'm not going to is it really just not letting us? Can you motivate through it?
Kind of thing.
Man, yeah. Like, what do you,
yeah.
How do you do that? Cause your brain's pretty powerful. It's like your number one deal, you know?
Yeah, it is your number one deal, and it will not just right itself without you changing. Mm. And that's, I think, so let's just take a random made up story. I don't know if this is the emailer or anybody else, but let's take you were raised in a home where being productive or almost perfectionistic was tied to being loved.
Mm.
And it was maybe not explicitly said or anything, but it's like, hey, in this family, we blah, blah, blah. You know, you have your like levels of accomplishment, or all of my siblings were this, and so I must be that as well. Or, you know, clearly mom and dad's faces are smiling when I accomplish a thing and they're frowning when I am not. And so you get this sort of from a very young age, you can have this productivity and accomplishment, and your value is what you produce. And it's very much gets wrapped around into a story about who we are, right? Mm-hmm. And now go through your life. I went to law school and I did my this and that. And I'm now high producing cog in the capitalist wheel. And I am running out of energy to keep making everyone happy so I'm lovable. Right.
Right.
I'm reducing this to just like a thread here, but
sure.
Kind of that idea of like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. You are starting to lose brain capacity and feel miserable and you don't want to get out of bed in the morning. And yet your value as a human being is tied to getting out of bed and producing. It's really hard mm-hmm. to say, you know what, I'm going to stop. I mean, I think we've had a code word forever for what we all need is a sabbatical, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm just taking a break from it's like burnout prevention. It's burnout treatment, but only a select few in this country anyway, get access to something like that where they're paid to take a break. Right.
Right.
And anyway, so kind of this idea of like you're, if you're tied to your job from a psycho emotional value perspective, right? Like I am nothing without this professional title, the money I make or whatever. Taking a break is, you know, tantamount to dying. Like it's a huge burden to think I've got to stop in order to recover and get better when all I've ever done is produce in order to feel good enough. Right. Mm-hmm. So you got to have someone help you unwrap that, because if you are not willing to stop and take a break and recover from burnout, it doesn't happen on its own. It just doesn't. And I wish it did. I think we all believe, like, oh, I'll take a vacation and I should be good. And then you're not. That's usually how you know. If you take a good week off and you are doing some things you love and getting plenty of rest and sleep and eating yummy food or something, and you go back like, let's do this. That's not burnout. That's you're running on the edge of your energy and you need a break, right?
Yeah, that's
That vacation doesn't do one dang thing. It just makes you feel worse.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. You're probably not in a good spot.
I've had that before where a vacation did nothing for me. Like get to the other end of it and you're like, well, I feel like I was maybe even more stressed out on this vacation.
Yeah. It's like that, especially with, you know, folks like us who work for themselves and feel like, you know, oh, by taking a vacation, I'm neglecting all these things that I myself have told myself I need to do. And so it's much tougher than a boss saying, yeah, don't think about work for 7 days. We our brains don't do that.
Yeah. Or knowing that that place has 4 other people that can make sure to cover for you while you're gone. So when you go, when we go, it's different because there is nobody. It's us. It's yourself. Yeah. And so you can't really say to yourself, don't worry about it. We got it while you're gone. Who does? Nobody.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
Well, and for both of you and maybe other people, like if productivity is so important that you might be feeling any small moments during a break with work stuff, thinking you're going to get ahead, right? Like, then I won't have to do this when I get back, or I could just. And so the problem probably is for most people, because we can work from anywhere usually, right? Or catch up on something from anywhere, because the internet is everywhere and the maybe some work you need to do, you can do or something, right? It is all willpower and it's all decision and boundaries about like taking a break. And most of us are not great at that, right?
Right.
So you might be thinking you're giving yourself an advantage, but what you're actually doing is reducing any chance for a break to be a break. Now, if you're not experiencing burnout, you just be like, that was kind of a productive vacation. Okay. But when you are experiencing burnout, you will, and you keep behaving in such a way. I mean, you're not, it takes longer. In fact, some studies are sort of naturalistic studies, sort of that kind of is a more, you ask people who've been through it and how long kind of thing versus, you know, following someone around. Mm-hmm. The average is like 1 to 3 years for full recovery from burnout. Like,
Jeez.
Extent.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot more than I thought you were going to say.
You're re-thickening your frontal cortex and shrinking your amygdala. It takes some time, right?
Yeah.
So some other studies have pointed to like up to a decade for people to fully feel like themselves again. So yes, it's serious. And it is really, I think because of the word burnout, we can feel that in a lot of contexts. I think we're not always seeing it as the seriousness that it is. And I don't know. it doesn't have a diagnostic-y sounding word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's burned out versus like a major depressive episode, recurrent, 304.5 on the diagnostic manual, right? Like that, it just doesn't seem, I don't know, but it is incredibly serious in terms of just how long it takes to recover and what you sort of need to do to feel like you're yourself again.
Right.
And what's really tricky is most people who get to burnout tend to be pretty ambitious and they're always going for stuff and, burning the candle at both ends. And it is such a personal flip to living a different way to recover that it's pretty tricky and people will just keep going. I mean, if you look at kind of our current model, it's like, well, then just throw some antidepressants at it or throw, I would assume most of the Peruvian jungle is full of, silicon bros who have hit burnout. And you're going to try whatever it takes in order to try to break it. Like, how do I get back to be myself? And most times people will throw at whatever has made them successful in the past. They'll throw the same kinds of thing, which actually is part of what got you to burnout. And the real answer, and this is the hard answer, is finding actual balance in your life. And I've worked with a couple of people, it's like pre-burnout and you can see it coming and it's already kind of beginning and we can really course correct. That's the best.
It's the best time to get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense, right?
Because then we're like, all right, here's some boundaries for your new vacation. Like you don't get to take your phone.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And you start to build other structures, like truly taking the weekend off, stuff like that. And you're done working at 5 and creating boundaries that just didn't exist for them. And you can prevent some of these more serious cases.
Yeah. And so let's say you get to a point where the burnout is like burned in, like you've really let it go. And now knowing what you've just said, like you're looking at 2 or 3 years of what is kind of a physical recovery.
Yeah.
It is. Like what are your chances? That seems like really low success rate to me. I don't know why. Because it's not like you can just stop for 2 years and go, well, that's it. I'm not doing
nice
nothing.
Refreshed. Yeah. Right.
Unless you're some billionaire
who
sold everything off and now can just sit around and do nothing. That's not most people. That's hardly anyone.
No,
so
it's not. And most people just keep working through the feeling burned out. Right. And then, I mean, we're a nation of alcoholics. That's one way we treat it. And truly like getting through the night. Right. And then doing it again the next day. Like I think sometimes, and we're pretty good at this, is finding escapes or other realities to enter, to leave the current reality. Right. Like that's one way we handle our own realities. And so I think there's a lot of time you can just keep kind of living that way. Mm-hmm. And so it takes some effort to do it differently. And so here's just a couple of ideas that are like, we're going to back off from the 3-year recovery plan real quick to just what are some scientifically proven treatments for daily management, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's severe all the way to like pre-burnout prevention kinds of things, these things have are pretty peer-reviewed studies stuff. So here's one that's so simple and hard. And anyone who does real steps with me will know this is like one of our main focuses because it is so powerful and works so well, but is hard to do without support. And that is making daily recovery a thing. Mm-hmm. So every single day. So the research is pretty overwhelming that if you can have a daily recovery event or effort, and we can go through some of those, it's way more important than waiting for a weekend or a vacation. So it's got to be every single day. Now, someone may say, hey, I play a video game for that. Cool, right? If that does it and you feel refreshed and ready to kick it the next morning, cool. But it cannot wait until your vacation 7 months from now.
No, right? It works the opposite for me. If I play a video game anytime during the workday, I feel like I'm neglecting something else. So that one would definitely
not for you.
Not for me. No.
Well, and so if we think about it, it's got to be something that
I have a brain change, right? Because that should work, and that should feel like a respite from work. But Yeah, it's changing my mind to accept playing a video game as a little short hour-long vacation from work, or half an hour, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so whether it's whatever your thing of choice is that makes you feel really like down, mm-hmm. like I don't mean it down, like down that
like,
way, more
like I've powered down my work.
Power down. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Actually, let's use a cell phone analogy. I think I might have mentioned this before, but I think it's really helpful. Is this idea of you can have your phone unplugged, but it's not recharging, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can be off the phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, okay, take your actual phone. I plug it in and it's charging, or I can just not touch it. I'm not using it either way. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing on a daily basis that is unplugged versus charging, recharging, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's what a vacation often acts like. It's like, well, I've unplugged, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm not working, but are you actually recharging? So the idea is to find something daily that helps you do some of this recharging. So the studies show that, you know, frequent breaks more important than long, like annual vacations, not enough, right? And especially even weekly breaks, right? So if you just only have something you look forward to on the weekend, that's tricky. So a couple ways to do this. Speaking of smartphones. Mm-hmm. So they had people, participants in lots of these studies, write regular journal entries, right? So they could mm-hmm. read like in the natural, their natural strategies people were using to combat burnout. And what they found that the work from home thing really is tricky. And this was done before COVID. So I think
before everybody was working from home.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like Scott has a really good method of doing this with like the hammock, hanging out with the dog in the hammock.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, hanging out with the dog, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I need to be better about just saying, all right, I'm going to go have some cat time for 30 minutes and play string with the cat and phone chilling. Off. Yes.
I find chilling off. With the dog isn't like this immediate feeling of, I mean, it's not even that revolutionary. I guess people probably spend a lot of time with their dogs. But for me, it's like if I'm having a crazy day and I'm in between stuff and I just know I need some mental energy to carry me through the night. Like Thursdays are really busy, so today's going to be nuts. Mm-hmm. And if I can just spend 30 minutes on the couch, nestled up with Rainer, who looks like a leper right now because her skin's so weird. Oh. But it doesn't matter. She's got these issues. Anyway, that is all I need sometimes to be good to go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that's rebuilding any walls in my brain, but it's definitely a good thing when I do it.
No, it is. And what you're doing is you're soothing your nervous system, right? You're an animal. This is why animals are therapeutic, right? Is that your heartbeat regulates itself with the animal, right? Or the cute overload or whatever happens. There's lots of good things that happen to a brain. If you're an animal lover, of course, not for people who hate animals, that doesn't work. but regulating your, and a hammock is a version of the same idea of like putting yourself in a position of rest, right? So yes, you should lie on a couch. That is an important daily tool you can use. Now think about this for a moment though. What do you do when you tend to lie on a couch is you then engage in scrolling. Or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what we're saying. But this is where like a hammock with a book or a hammock with a dog or a hammock by yourself, mm-hmm. you're putting yourself in a rest position and regulating your nervous system to some extent, right? Mm-hmm. But if you add entertainment all the time, you're never actually disengaging fully. And so it doesn't take a ton. You don't have to lay there for 2 hours to get the benefit. You can lay there for 10 minutes. Yeah. But what we've learned, and I should get the numbers correct on this, but like, you know, as a whole, we really struggle with silence, right? Because now we can feel it 100% of the time.
Right.
So for some, sitting there in silence is like a death wish. Like, oh, no, my brain does.
Like the silence, to quote, you know, is deafening. You know, when it's when you're so used to always listening to something. Is there, I know there's like for sleep, you've got your 90-minute cycles. Is there an equivalent for taking a break? Like is a 20-minute break better than a 30-minute break or something like that? Like, does it?
I'm not sure exactly on the numbers, but I do know 5 minutes is effective. So
really? Okay.
I think kind of like a nap. There's too long for a nap and then there's just the right amount for a nap. Yeah.
And we vary as people, right? But I think it's like sub 30 is the perfect nap. And anything over that, you run the risk of thinking you're in third grade again and you missed the bus. You know? Like, you don't know where you are and it's confusing or disorienting.
I hate that feeling of too long a nap.
There's like an energy giving time frame for a nap. And people kind of have to figure that out, but it's usually sub 30. So I would say any kind of resting, probably sub 30. Similarly is probably the most effective. Anytime longer. Now, if you are laying there and can just be with your thoughts and you're meditative and you feel good, I mean, I don't think there's a problem until you're ready to get up. Mm-hmm. But for many people, that's just long. And they don't spend a lot of time in the quiet of their own minds. And so build and think of it as like, you know, stretching, getting more flexible or something like that, where you try for 5 minutes and see what happens to your brain and then get up and go live your day. And try it again the next day and just see if you can start, because we can train ourselves. Like, think about anything you've done multiple times. Your brain is doing incredible things. Like, let's say you go on the same walk every single day, the same route. Mm-hmm. Your brain will stop noticing lots of things because it's used to it now and they're not threats. So it just kind of stops seeing certain things, right? Mm-hmm. And then anything out of the ordinary, your brain is going to pick up. You have just manipulated your brain by doing something similar every single day to do some of the magic work that it does, which is to take a million points of stimuli and ignore most of them. Mm-hmm. And then just give you what you need to survive, right? So you can do the same thing with any kind of training. You can train yourself to rest. You can train yourself to nap for 20 minutes. You can train yourself. You just have to repeat it and do the thing. And eventually your body and your brain is like, oh yeah, the couch, this is what we do on the couch, is we lay back and we rest. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why a hammock, I think, works really well, is it's not used for anything else. Usually, right? You're not like,
and it's also not in front of a TV. It's not in front of a computer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And
I'm going to put my, I'm going to set up a hammock right here in the room for the cold hooks.
Yeah, I like
just
it.
Two big hooks in the wall. Like
the sitting kind, that just enough reclining, but you're still kind of sitting. Like that. That might be good.
Mm-hmm. Won't dang it, they had those at Pier 1 Imports, and now there's no more Pier 1 Imports. Dang it.
They went away.
Yeah. So let me, I know I was sad about that. Okay. So real quick, let me go back to just these small couple things you can do. So putting your smartphone away in these journals, what they found is two groups of people who had the problem with conflicting work and home. And this is 2014, by the way. So before everyone was doing the same problem, but the work home conflict, what they found is that people who put their work, whatever, which is usually always your cell phone at this point, right? They just put it away. They didn't do texting or email after work hours. Mm-hmm. Those people recovered way faster than the ones who didn't have that line, right? Mm. So these are people that are already burned out in order to do these daily things to try to help, right? And so disengaging from work and not using work phones or work email or that type of thing, very important to recovery. And so have a timeline, like, when do you want to stop working? Now, so you guys do shows at night, like, you're kind of all over the map. So you just have to find, when is your off time? Back in the day, you would be 8 to 5 and then you were off, right? Like, find your 5 to 10 PM. Where is that 5 hours where you do hobbies, where you relax, where you hang out with friends, where, you know, where is your I'm not working time, and then protect it, right? Create boundaries around it.
Yeah.
And then more journals, more data on this. They found that spent some social activities really, really helpful in protecting against burnout. And it can be, you know, lots of versions of that. Other things like lying on the couch, doing nothing, napping, and then physical exercise. There's just nothing that works the same way. It's just the most effective at getting our brains happy.
I was better at this during the height of the pandemic, during the initial part of the lockdowns, because I had all these minis. I still have them, but I'd paint them and I basically would just carve out an hour a day and just paint minis. And I think I need to go back to saying, all right, from 12:30 to 1:30, that is my, I'm protecting that time frame. That is my little respite, or even half an hour would be fine. 12:30 to 1 or something.
When you tell people to put their phones away, what does that entail? Like, just not use it for a while? It's still in your pocket, but you're not thinking about it. You lock it away. Do you turn it off? Like, what do you suggest people do in that regard? Because I'm guessing that's a huge thing today. People are just so tapped into that thing. They don't know where to put it or what to do with it.
Yeah. So one thing we're working on in Real Steps right now is having everyone cold turkey eliminate a social media drug. And it could be anything. It doesn't even have to be social media. We're just calling it that. It could be something else, right? But to find one thing for the next month that doesn't actually make you feel good at all and you don't realize it. So what we did is, everyone opened their phone, found their, you could do it with your eyes closed. You find the app, your thumb knows right where to go, clicks on the app. And the first thing you see, we had everybody sort of check how it made them feel, right? And the responses were like stressed, fear, anger, the stuff that the first thing you click on for your drug of choice is fear, anger, doom, stress, hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Not great, right? And so just for a month, everyone's just going to take a little break from, and it could be as simple as like you go through your social media feed and anything that makes you feel crappy, you mute it. But you have to take a second and feel it like, ooh, that does make me feel jealous. Mute. That makes me feel sad or frustrated or scared. And this is not to avoid feelings. It's to avoid feeding yourself a steady diet of crap. Right. And so reducing some of that just and living your life without it to try it. So it's a really powerful strategy to go through. So I'm going to have you guys do it right now. Let's just do it.
Okay.
Pull up your phones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want you to open your crack of choice.
Oh, you asked me at a weird time because I've actually cut way back on stuff like Twitter.
Okay. That's fine. Pick anything though.
All right.
It could be an email from your mother-in-law. Whatever it is.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Okay.
I'm glad I don't get those.
Feeling. Okay. So find your first thing, the first thing you pop up that pops up.
Yeah.
And then take a second and just look at it, read it, whatever it is. Look at the picture, read it, and just sense in your body, like, what is your physiological, emotional response to the thing you're seeing?
Oh, that's an interesting way of thinking about it. My physiological response is, it's like, okay, I just opened up Twitter and it defaulted to the For You page, which is kind of a nightmare now.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, I'm preparing for the worst. I've had this feeling of like, oh crap. I hope these first few thumb swipes don't reveal something stupid, like a feeling of like,
okay,
I don't dread, know, anticipate, yeah, not anticipation, but dread, I guess, a little bit of dread. Yeah. Dread's good. Dread.
Okay.
Yeah.
And anticipatory angst. So we could call that your amygdala swelling just a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, Brian, have you done it?
I have. Yeah. And okay. I have like almost completely given up Twitter. I reply, like if I see a notification that somebody tagged me in something, I reply. So Twitter is almost completely gone for me. Facebook is the thing that it's like, all right, if I look at one thing on Facebook, I doom scroll and just keep going. So I've pulled up Facebook just the thought of doom scrolling has given me that like, I'm going to waste so much time if I stay in this stupid app.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So time wasting again, dread. So you both just took 1 second and went from living your life to feeling dread. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. All by choice.
Thanks a lot, Wendy. Great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It's been great.
So what I would suggest for someone this, and again, this is just the baby small step to try. And that is now mute whatever the thing is. Let's say it was a post from your neighbor and pictures of this raging party you were not invited to. Okay. Just mute it. They're not told they're being muted. You're just going to take a month free of hearing about your neighbor. Okay. And then go to the next image. If it's Instagram or something, the next one, what is it? And if it's not, doesn't make you feel like the world's a better place or that you're cared for or that there are cool things to learn or it's NASA. I don't know, like whatever the things that feel like good and inspiring. And a lot of people do this where they were like, well, I follow these artists and it's really cool. And then when they really go to how it makes them feel, what they find is either maybe there's jealousy or there's drama in that weird community. And they're like, wait a minute, there's actually way more than I'm just looking at their art. Mm-hmm. And then others, mm-hmm. it's like, I look at their art and feel awesome, mm-hmm. right? That's what we're getting at. And that's just right there. Think of this as like small doses of the good kind of dopamine, or, and that's, you know, curating what you're seeing that actually makes you feel good, inspired, energized, versus curating what you're seeing, not on purpose, but algorithms doing it for you to create rage and resentment and all the other things that really get likes and clicks. I mean, that's how this works. So you would just take a little time, just designate for yourself, maybe a month off, 6 weeks off or something, where you're only seeing things that feel good, and just see what freaking happens in your life. And then you realize like, oh, hold on. I have energy for this or that, right?
And that's your amygdala.
Oftentimes people...
Yeah, go ahead.
What?
I was going to say, how do you gauge whether your amygdala wall is building up again? Like, how will you know?
You'll feel it pretty quickly. Mm. Like, in terms of, you can get real angry and, you know, all that like fun resentment feeling. Or not resentment feeling, that righteous indignation, and how can this person be so stupid? And just like the power of that drug is real. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly, if you're not having that on a regular basis, it's kind of like having sugar cereal for breakfast over and over and over, and then you can't. So you eat some protein or something that actually gives you energy, makes you feel better. You'll just feel better.
Right.
And so that's the thing. You'll feel better. If you don't feel better, well, then maybe there's something else going on. But you should feel a little boost of energy. You should feel like a few more minutes of your life opens up. That's a really common experience. People are like, whoa, I suddenly have time. Mm. A thing you thought you had none of, you suddenly can feel you have more of. And so you're just, here's the thing. You may be less tempted to go to that app because you're only seeing things that are like happy-go-lucky, and that doesn't drive you there. So you're like, oh, do something else. Right. And so everyone's going to have a different response to it. And that's just be curious about it, see what happens. But what we're, in essence, if you take these daily ways to reduce burnout, one is to not give your precious life energy to something that doesn't matter to recovery. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. And most of us are convinced that whatever we're doing online is for work, or it helps me feel informed, or blah, blah, blah. We have so many good lies we tell ourselves. But the truth is, if you don't check with your body and your emotional response, you're lying to yourself. It's your brain telling you a story like, oh, this is fun. And it's because it loves dopamine. Mm-hmm. And so check with your body and your emotions to see how something impacts you. And then you can play around with, you know, not imbibing and see what happens. And then, you know, go back to it and see like, oh yeah, I didn't miss this, or, you know, whatever it might be. There are a lot of people who have quit certain behaviors because they're not good for them. This is historically true. And so when you're stuck and you're feeling crap and you don't know where things are coming from, it's kind of like finding out what you're allergic to. Why? Stop eating the cheese.
Yeah.
And then slowly introduce the cheese and see what happens.
Problems come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a good
thing. So overall, though, I would say this, like, versions of detaching from work is really important for reducing burnout risk and recovery. So you have times and limits, and, you know, sometimes, you know, pre-pandemic, I used to have people do this where, you know, if you worked from home, they would put a line on the floor from their office to their other living space, and they could only be dressed for work across that line. And then if they're not dressed for work, they can't come back. They have to get redressed again. Kind of ways to just create, there is a boundary in my life between my work and my life. Really hard to do for a lot of us, right? And so finding ways to create some of those boundaries would be good. Then practicing small de-stress things that are, your nervous system gets regulated, soothed. So hammock with the dog is a perfect example. Nap, hanging out on a couch, nice walk, fresh air, big glass of water. All the stuff we know is good for us, actually is good for us. And then, and if you're religious or you're into meditation or any kind of brain centering activity is also incredibly powerful here. Mm-hmm. It just gets your brain in a totally different space. You're thinking different thoughts. You know, again, it's like humans need the diversity of and balance in life. And because work can just consume everything, it will, right? Mm-hmm. And so finding some ways to set some of these boundaries and doing them in small ways is, and then if you can take vacations, really plan a restful vacation rather than a stressful kind. If you can take weekends and make sure there are a couple hours every weekend where you are really giving yourself something that you need to recover. You know, we're creatures of habit as well. And so breaking some of this can be pretty tricky, but with some concerted effort, you know, you can prevent burnout. You can heal burnout. You just can't keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you can't. And it doesn't just stop. You have to do something about it, which is often the theme here in Wendy's segment. Take care of your own stuff. Take out your own trash. You gotta do the work. There's no freebies out there. Sorry. No supplement you can take will make you
I wish.
Feel less burnout. Although
keep
maybe
trying the red pill, I keep trying the blue pill. Neither of them work.
Sure. I my guess is if you do a lot of mushrooms, you might think that you're taking care of burnout, but you might only.
Dang
be
it! I haven't tried that though.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should actually have a whole session on conversation about mushrooms. Because we're running into more and more accessibility and use, and recreational / therapeutic use, not guided therapeutic use. Mm-hmm. And we're finding a couple of things emerging, people just escaping reality in a really fun new way of escaping reality. that is therapeutic, but like it also is really hard to live in your normal life when the color blue is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen if you just take a little mushroom.
Yeah.
I met a guy a few weeks ago who was coming to Colorado to study psychedelic psychology or psychedelic treatment and learning how to like figuring out what the doses are that benefit people but don't go so far as to, like you say, ooh, I love the color blue, it's awesome.
Yeah. And I never want to go back and talk to my wife. Yeah. You know, like that.
Right, exactly.
Because that's the risk you run. And there's some really cool stuff happening. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but it was probably a couple years ago, I was like, hey everybody, the future is psychedelic. I don't know if you heard me predict that, but it is on its way. And the microdosing is kind of what you're talking about here, where smaller amounts that are effective, they're trying to figure out exactly what that
where
is.
That,
and
I where think, that line is.
Yeah.
The old lyric.
And there's some awesome stuff.
The old lyric, everything counts in large amounts. Do not apply that to mushroom dose taking. Okay.
No.
Don't do that.
No, I mean, but we should do that. So if somebody has been, somebody has a question or they've had their own experience or, you can talk about your fun recreational thing all day long, but more from a therapeutic perspective, it'd be fun to use that as a launching pad to talk about some of the.
I would like to talk about it because I don't understand it at all. Like, I don't get how we went from. I feel like the last time anybody talked seriously about quote unquote mushrooms or psychedelics was like, I don't know, 70s, maybe part of the 80s or whatever. And it felt like it kind of disappeared. And all anyone talked about
since. Yeah, it was the 50s and 60s when the research was really getting started. And then the 60s kind of turned the public opinion against it.
Mm-hmm. Like other things.
It's a bit of a, the history of it is really pretty fascinating. The book, my brain will not remember his name. He wrote the Omnivore's Dilemma. Michael, no.
I know this.
Hey, who has Google?
Dilemma.
Scott does.
I'm looking right now. Here it is. This is from a Formulas nonfiction book written by American author Michael Pollan.
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 P-O-L-L-A-N. Pollan.
So he wrote a book about psychedelics fairly recently that I think has helped popularize a little bit of just like, here's a dude who's written other books we like, and he goes through and explores some stuff in the therapeutic stuff. And this is kind of, he goes through the history too. It's a pretty good primer if you're interested. From that perspective, but the research has started up again. It was basically illegal and just looked down on for so long. And so we missed a good 20, 30 years of research that would have probably been better had we had access to it, because it does some really, really cool things to the brain that nothing else does. So that if we could harness, could really alleviate. I mean, it is drug resistant and treatment resistant depression. It's the only thing we found that can touch it in a way that nothing else can. And anyway, so we can get more into it, but if anyone's interested, his book's good.
Yeah. He also has some great stuff.
And it's his own personal experience too. It's kind of fun.
His stuff on Netflix. I can't remember the show. What's it called? Whatever it is. He's got some stuff on Netflix that's very good, where he talks about food and origins of food and stuff.
Yeah.
He also,
food's his big thing.
Fun side note, his brother-in-law is Michael J. Fox. So there's that.
Oh, really? Tracy Pollan. That would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I just happened to be in his Wikipedia page and it says famous brother-in-law, Michael J. Fox. Anyway.
That's fun.
All right, then. I hope this helps Krondor with his question and query, and any of you out there experiencing perhaps symptoms of burnout, whether they're work-related or otherwise. Let us know your thoughts and feelings. You can keep those emails coming or send us texts about it, and we'll talk about it on the show. And do, I think, look forward to an eventual episode, if not sooner than later, a discussion about what the hell these mushrooms are all about, man. Mm-hmm. I want to know. I want to understand. Yeah. I talked to somebody who says his micro-dose, something he did, which, you know, probably legally dubious, changed his life for the better, he claims.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I imagine a lot of them say that. And I'm, you know, curious. Why?
Technically, probably will change anybody's life. Is it for the better is the question.
Yeah, that's the question, right? So find out more on a future episode. Wendy, as always, it's a pleasure. Do you have anything you'd like to promote or push or say or do?
No. I'm coming to Vegas and I'm excited. Yay. And you still need to give me assignments. So.
You'll have them. We're going to, during the game thing, I want to do like a Lucy booth where you just get to go and hang out with Wendy and ask her questions. Yeah. And beyond that, we want you at the table for the live show.
Oh, yeah. I've got plans for you. So don't worry. Oh, don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
And we'll figure out. We might need to talk offline because, as is the case with Vegas, things could change. Things might be changing with regard to what day things are happening now. We're finding out. So.
Okay.
So don't make any firm plans around the TMS events because those TMS events might change.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
That sounds good to me.
I would just plan to be in that city for those 4 days.
Yeah, just plan to be in that city. We'll get you taken care of.
Yeah, that'll be good. And you're coming with Misha, which will be fun. Buffet. Yeah, I get two-thirds of
my roommate.
Two-thirds of my sisters will be there. That'll be fun.
I would argue the most responsible.
I wouldn't just argue it.
Sisters. Yeah,
I would guarantee it. Anyway, so that's coming up. So watch for that. And Wendy, as always, a pleasure. We'll have you back next week for more. Have a great week, and we'll see you then.
Cool. Bye.
Bye now.
Yeah.
All right. That does that. That does that for us there.
Yeah, that does that.
It sure does. I do want to do a quick note here. I want to mention this. If any of you out there are musician types, all right, especially electronic musicians, you don't have to be. It can be whatever.
What if about folk musicians, Scott? What about
whatever
klezmer?
They want? All that's
what
fine.
About klezmer? Skiffle?
Sure, skiffle. Sure. Why not? Bring in the skifflers.
Finnish death metal. What about that?
Are they skifflers? If you do the skiffle, are you
sure?
A skiffler?
Yeah.
Okay.
And skiffler's mom is hot.
Skiffler's
still hot.
Mom still got it going on. Oh, that's Stacy's mom. Or no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stacy's mom has. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, that guy. Anyway, if you would like to let us know if you are musically inclined enough that you might want to take a crack at an arrangement and or new take on the TMS intro theme, I want to do a little contest for that. But mainly I want to gauge interest first. So I want to see who's like sort of into this idea. So send us emails or texts and let me know because I'm very curious about it. I'm thinking about just shaking that up a little bit and having additional versions of our theme. If you if you like the TMS Skyhawk one, great. Do a riff on that. If you got something wholly new in mind, I'd be happy to hear it. So if you're a musician, let us know.
Doesn't have to be a cover. Can be a totally original thing like Bo Schwartz did, which is a totally original thing. Or the guy that did the 70s, The Morning Stream.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, we love that. The Morning Stream. His
that
name
one
is,
right there.
We used to call him Goobers. Gobers.
Oh, that's right. Rob Gabers.
Gabers. Yes. I think is how you actually say it, but I always said Goobers. Yes. Anyway, if you want to be one of those people, let me know. I would love to hear from you. Okay. Some shows today. Coverville, 1 p.m. today. Anything special going on there?
You bet there is. Celebrating the birthdays of Poison, for frontman of Poison, Vince Neil. See, I keep wanting to, Brett Michaels, I keep wanting to swap Motley Crue and Poison. They have the same hairstylist. Brett Michaels celebrating a birthday and Mark McGrath celebrating a birthday. So let's just get Sugar Ray out of the frickin' way now. Mm-hmm. But we'll slather it with a healthy dose of Poison to help the medicine go down. Actually, I've got some really cool. I've got a country cover of a Sugar Ray song that will blow your mind. It makes you feel like
weird.
Like this song should have been done by in country style from the get-go. I love it.
Wow. All right.
As well as some Poison. I mean, you're going to get covers of Talk Dirty to Me, Squeezebox, the Who's Squeezebox covered by Poison, Nothing But a Good Time, Unskinny Bop. Of course, Every Rose Has Its Thorn, because we got to do that one. But and then you'll also hear some Sugar Ray. It's going to be a fun, fun show. Be there 1 p.m. twitch.tv/Coverville.
Nice. That'll be today. Core at 5 p.m. tonight. We've got a lot of gaming stuff to talk about, so show up for that. The big Diablo 4 beta starts tomorrow if you pre-ordered, so excited to talk about what the hell that might mean. Tonight on Core, 5 p.m. Mountain Time for the live show, and you can check it out later on the podcast if you'd like. We'll be doing Film Sack this weekend. I do not remember our movie.
I don't either, actually. I know that you say that. It was something that we were looking forward to after the joy that Spree brought us. It's funny how much I still think about Spree. Breakdown. Oh, yeah, Breakdown from 1997. Yeah. Kurt Russell and a bunch of actors you know from playing bad guys, character actor bad guys in movies.
Yeah, actually looking forward to this one.
Yes.
I haven't seen it.
It is worth looking forward to because it is such a damn good movie.
Sweet. So that's all coming up. Check that out this weekend. Patreon.com/TMS is how this show is supported. And if you haven't jumped in yet, there's no reason not to now. If you'd never like ads, if you want pre-show content every day, couch parties on the weekend. Speaking of which, are we doing the...
Oh, yeah. Couch party tomorrow. Play date 2 weeks.
2 weeks from tomorrow. Are we doing that Pedro Pascal thing tomorrow? I can't remember.
Yes, the Pedro Pascal thing tomorrow. And prior to that, if you like to get your morning started with a little trivia, guess the connection. Just follow Coverville. It's the only thing that I tweet because it's automatically done by Streamlabs OBS. So if you follow Coverville on Twitter, you'll get notification of when I'm giving away prizes if you can figure out what six songs have to do with each other.
Nice. Check that out. Lots of reasons, though, to join. So patreon.com/TMS is the place to go. For all other inquiries, head on over to frogpants.com/TMS. And now,
yes.
Music exit.
Music. We should play some music. Paul Jigger, a.k.a. Jigger Dad from Canada, wrote in.
Canada!
Mm-hmm. One right there. Hello, Scotch and Bourbon. Today marks my fourth decade of escaping the womb.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's party.
Big 4-0, man. Woo.
No kidding. It'll also be my first week in my new role at my job, my first foray into a sales position. Oh, so if you get hit up by Jigger Dad, just walk away. Just walk away. I'm very excited to challenge myself and take a new step in my career. To celebrate, I'm requesting the Dolly Parton cover of the Collective Soul song Shine. I only found this recently and enjoyed it immensely. As always, love the show, though. Yeah, this is such a great cover. This is, that...
Yeah, I love that.
Yep. Covered by Dolly Parton. So speaking of songs covered in a country style, I'm amazed that I've never played this on the show. Came out in 2001 from her album Little Sparrow. Here is Dolly Parton and Shine.
That'll do it for us. We'll see you guys next week. If we don't see you this weekend, we'll see you on Monday for a brand new TMS.
Show me where to look and tell me what will I find? What will I find? Get more podcasts like this at frogpants.com.
You a tough-ass geezer.